Hello again and welcome to Music is on Sports, where great storytelling is exactly what we do. Kelly Elbin along with Bob Bubka. It's our last show of January 2023. And Bob, the Super Bowl number 57 in Arizona is set. The Kansas City Chiefs, going back just a couple years after winning the Super Bowl against a powerhouse Philadelphia Eagles, 4 or 5 years removed from winning their Super Bowl. You got the chips ready. You got the dip, the wings. We're still a couple weeks out, but Super Bowl 57 is going to be here before you know it.
It sure is, Kel. And the difficulty of this one, if you want to bet on Kansas City, you got to have the resolve that Mahomes is not going to get hurt. I mean, you make a wager on KC and first play from scrimmage, Mahomes gets taken out. Now what do you got? I mean, this is a tough one to bet on.
It is. The Eagles sacked opposing quarterback 70 times during the regular season. It is a tremendous defensive line. And in their two playoff games, they forced 4 turnovers, one against the Giants and then 3 in what turned out to be a debacle for the Niners in losing their 2 quarterbacks. And but the Eagles, look, they outscored the Giants at 49ers 69-14 in 2 games. They are on a massive roll right now. And they don't seem to have any weaknesses. I think the only challenge involves the Eagles and perhaps the Chiefs as well has to do with Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce becoming the first brothers to play in the Super Bowl. And mom, Donna, who's on social media wearing both jerseys a lot, and her husband, Ed, who the heck are they going to root for?
That's not an easy thing. I would sit on the 50-yard line and go back and forth depending on, matter of fact, what I would recommend,
yes.
I would go to the side that was losing, because the losing brother is going to need the comfort and everything more from the mom and dad than the winning side, winning brother is. So that's how I would play that, but they're not going to listen to me. Otherwise, they'd be sending me tickets, and I'd tell them where to sit.
Well, no matter where they sit, they're going to see their sons play major roles in Super Bowl 57. I mean, Travis Kelce is easily the best tight end in the National Football League, and Jason Kelce is an all-pro himself as the center for the Eagles on just a tremendous offensive line. And the interior, particularly for the Eagles, if you can't sort of tell, Bob, I like the Eagles a lot in advance of this game. But the interior, I mean, they ran the ball for 268 yards in the game last week against the Niners. You've got, not only do you have Jalen Hurts, who's an explosive weapon at any time, but Miles Sanders and Kenneth Gainwell and Boston Scott, I mean, they just come at you. And they run the option play that a lot of teams have a very difficult time, the RPO, the run-pass option, very difficult time defending. And unless Kansas City can force some turnovers, I just think they're in for a long day. And as you said with Mahomes, he's got to get out of the pocket. He's got to make plays, Bob. He can't stand back there against a ferocious defensive rush from the Eagles.
Yeah, but if anybody has the talent to do that, he certainly does. And we saw his intestinal fortitude on full display in the ending of that last game where he went on a quarterback keeper and ended up out of bounds and then got whacked really hard, which led to that winning field goal. Patrick Mahomes right now is maybe the most talented guy that I've seen in a long time, combined with the amount of intestinal fortitude that he seems to possess in spades.
He is. I agree with you. And he has Andy Reid as his coach. So you have another familial situation there with Reed, the former coach of the Eagles, who wasn't able to get his team in Philadelphia to win the Super Bowl. He got him there and then finally got his first Super Bowl as coach of the Chiefs. I promise you that Eagles fans would love nothing more than to have their team beat Andy Reed in the Super Bowl. Nick Sirianni, incidentally, was an assistant coach when Reed was hired in Kansas City, and he did not retain him. And Sirianni ultimately, obviously, has made it to Philadelphia, has done a terrific job in just a couple of years. So the coaching matchup has some intrigue to it as well.
Yeah, it really does. I think two of the more outstanding coaches in the NFL going head-to-head. And I really think two of the best teams are going head-to-head. Now, you don't guarantee to get that in every Super Bowl. But in this one, there's no doubt in my mind anyway that these are the two best teams, so we could be in for a heck of a game.
Yeah, they are. They are both the number one seeds in their respective conferences, and the Eagles have certainly played that way. And the Chiefs made enough plays, and you're right about the guttiness of Pat Mahomes and a terrible mistake by the young kid Osai with the personal foul call, which was the right call when Mahomes scrambled out of bounds. And so instead of having a potential 60-yard field goal that Harrison Butker would not have made, he had a 45-yarder that he made by about 5 yards that got them in. Hey, you know what, Bob? We're looking ahead to Super Bowl 57, but our guest today, Frank Herzog, called one of the most iconic runs or plays in the history of the Super Bowl, the off-tackle run by John Riggins in Super Bowl 17, 40 years ago. And when we interviewed Frank yesterday, it was 40 years to the day that he called that fourth and one run. Riggins off left tackle, broke the tackle of Don McNeil of the Dolphins, and was off and running. Great storyteller, and Frank sitting next to Sam Huff and Sonny Jurgensen. Wow, what a trio they were.
Oh, they really were, and I think our listeners are really going to enjoy listening to Frank. He just has a special way of telling his tale. I know I really enjoyed it. I know you did, Kel, and I think our listeners really will enjoy it.
Well, I was very fortunate growing up in the D.C. area and doing what a lot of people did there, and that was turn down the volume on their TV and turn on the radio to listen to Frank, Sam, and Sonny. And then later on, I was the statistician for the Redskins radio network, so sat next to them for 3 seasons, and that was a kind of a dream come true. So that was a lot of fun, and Frank, you're going to hear from in just a little bit. Hey, one other thing I noticed in the playoff games, and it was throughout the season. Bob, when I was a kid, man, if it was 4th and 1 or 4th and 2, particularly early in the game, teams were highly reluctant to go for it on 4th down. Man, that is one of the massive changes in the NFL today. The Eagles went for it on, 4th and 6 on their opening drive. Ball was at, the 40-yard line. Now, the pass, as it turned out, to Devontae Smith was actually incomplete, but they ruled it a catch, and they went on and scored from there. But teams are with the saber metrics and all that, man, teams are much more willing to gamble pretty much anywhere on the field at times.
Well, analytics are dictating that.
They found
out that, hey, 4th and 2 from this spot, mathematically, you're better off going for it. And that's why we're witnessing the change. And I guarantee you we're going to see it here in the Super Bowl. Of course, the stakes are a lot higher. One team decides to go on 4th down and doesn't make it, boy, that coach is going to be in for quite a hard time. But that's the way the game has evolved now. It's more exciting, I think. And hey, I think it won't be too long before 4th down. Every team's going to be going for it, unless it's maybe 10 or 15 yards away.
Yeah. And in the case of the way the game is today, if it's 4th and inches, even if it's your own 20-yard line, you can just put a couple of big guys behind your quarterback and push his rear end in, and he'll get that first down. It's almost can't get it. So even when it's backed up to your own 20-yard line, teams are going for it. Hey, Bob, before we get to Frank Herzog, the world of hockey, we talk about some hockey here, but having the great Golden Jet, Mr. Hull, pass away, Bobby Hull pass away last week, what an unbelievable player he was throughout his NHL and World Hockey League career. He and his son Brett, the only two to have more than 500 goals in the National Hockey League. The Golden Jet, as he was referred to, was a absolute powerful hockey player and a real loss to the world of hockey.
I couldn't agree more. He not only was great on the ice, he was a wonderful ambassador for the sport of hockey.
Yeah, he really was. And really NHL royalty with that whole family. His brother played with him in Chicago. And boy, 600 and 610 goals. And then his son, Brett, 741 goals. So, boy, the whole name in hockey, it is it doesn't get too much higher. It doesn't get too much higher as well with Frank Herzog. He was the voice of the Redskins for 25 years, the greatest radio trio in broadcasting history for for radio on NFL with Sam Huff and Sonny Jurgensen. You got plenty of stories coming your way from Frank Herzog right after this from our friends at Titleist.
Being number one is earned. And once again, the Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X have earned the trust of the overwhelming majority of players at every level and recorded the most wins across the worldwide professional tours and amateur events. This continued dominance is validation that performance matters when it matters most. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Kelly Elbin and Bob Bupka with you. Bob, as we record this interview on January 30th, 2023, it is 40 years to the day that our special guest called this extraordinary run by John Riggins a classic Super Bowl moment and the greatest play in the history of the Washington Redskins.
There's the snap and the Riggins goes. Oh, he's got the first down.
Let me let the goosebumps settle back down just a little bit. Hey, Bob, along with my dear best friend, Tim Malloy, I was lucky to be at the Rose Bowl that incredible day when the Redskins captured the first of their three Super Bowl titles. And I can assure you that many of us still get tingles from hearing it. From 1979 to 2004, he was at the center of the greatest radio trio in NFL history. There's no other way to say it. With Hall of Famers Sam Huff and Sonny Jurgensen by his side, Frank, Sam, and Sonny dominated the airwaves in the nation's capital like no one else. What a treat it is to welcome my friend Frank Herzog to Musings on Sports. How are you, Frank?
Kelly, you're too kind. Thank you very much. Bob, good to hear your voice and again.
Well, it's really a pleasure and an honor to have you joining us.
Listen, I got to give you a disclaimer right off the top. Yeah. I want people to understand who are listening to this. My memory's not that good anymore.
Oh, good.
Next month,
that's
I celebrate.
That's going to make it
really
good.
Well, there's two reasons. Next month, I celebrate my 78th birthday. So I'm old. And second, when I retired, I said, you know, I'm leaving all this stuff behind. I'm not going to be one of these old farts who sits around and says, oh, remember when we did this and remember the day that and remember when this happened. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what I'm doing now. Where's my life going now? So as a result, I've forgotten a lot of stuff.
You know, and I got to tell you what, Bob, to that point, I'm on an email thread of Frank's photography that he sends out all the time. You've really enjoyed, I don't know if it's dabbling in or just being really, really good at being a photographer for quite some time, Frank.
I dove into it, and I'm working with Photoshop and Lightroom. I do all kinds of manipulation with photos, and I love it. And it's very stimulating mentally, so it's a good time. It's my profession.
Hey Frank, looking back four decades, what was that moment like for you to make that call? And did you grasp the significance of it as Washington took the lead over the Dolphins? 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And the Skins going to win 27-17.
Well, Bob, you know, the scene was set. The Redskins were driving. And they got to that situation in the field, and we knew Riggins. They called a timeout, and we knew the play. We knew what they were going to do. They knew it was going to be Riggins. It was going to be Riggins left behind Jacoby and Grimm. So that was not a surprise. When they came out and ran the play, Riggins went left behind Grimm. Otis Wansley threw a terrific block. He vaulted into the air, hit the middle linebacker. But then Riggins surprised me. He bounced off of the back end of Jacoby, I think, and broke around the end. He made it an end run. And it caught everybody by surprise, including me. But as soon as he cleared the end and that defensive back slipped and fell, I knew it was over. It was gone. He's gone. That's why I said it. It was because I could see the rest of the field. So that was a surprise to me. And it was a great moment, but you didn't, you know, it was still, the Dolphins were an awful good team. And you were always concerned that they were going to come back and ruin the fun. So we were kind of cautious the rest of the game.
Hey, Frank, that recording has been played many times over the years NFL films. So you still getting residuals every time it airs?
Yeah, Bob Wright. Here's the way it worked. Back in the days I was doing these games, I don't know if NFL Films still does this, but if they used your play-by-play call on a play in a game, they would keep track of it. And at the end of the season, they would send you a check for each call, and each call was worth $32. So with the Redskins doing so well those three Super Bowl years, as you can imagine, come about in the middle of March, I'd get a nice little check for $800-$900. But that was it. It was $32, and that's it. No residuals, nothing. So I got $32 for that damn call. They've played it a million times. It's been everywhere, and I haven't seen a red cent, and I don't care.
$32.
Wow. You summed it up perfectly by saying you don't care because you have the pleasure and honor of making that call.
Just keep playing it. That's all I say.
That's it.
Well, Frank Herzog, for 25 years, the radio voice of the Washington Redskins, is with us on Musings on Sports. Hey, Frank, to what you just said about that you don't care, John Feinstein, longtime reporter, sports reporter, columnist for the Washington Post, wrote recently about you, and I think this speaks to who you are. He said, Frank was such a class act and so good at what he did. He was a homer without being a homer. What I mean by that is you knew he was pulling for the Bullets or the Redskins, but he never said we, never whined about officiating calls, and never made excuses. A pro's pro and a really good guy. Did that come? I mean, you were a reporter for the CBS affiliate in D.C. and the ABC affiliate for many years. Was that more the Frank Herzog reporter as opposed to the homer?
Yeah, and it grew out of Super Bowl VII. I was a young Cub reporter at All News Radio, WTOP. And so I had to work the weekends. And one weekend in December, I went on Sunday morning, and a guy walks in the door, and they used a two-man crew to cover the Redskins games because the Redskins were the only thing in town. Okay? That was it. The town went quiet like a tomb on a Redskins Sunday. So the guy walks in the door, and he says, "Hey, Jack called in sick. I need some help covering this game. You want to go?" And I said, "Fred, I've watched football, but I don't know the insides and stuff. I don't know any of these players or anything." He said, "Don't worry about it. It's just like a news story. Who, what, when, where, and why. It'll be easy." And I said, "Well, what about the locker room?" He said, "You just follow the crowd. It'll be easy." Okay. So we go down to cover my first Redskin game. Was a playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. And I did the job, flown in my reports, and I had Monday, Tuesday off. And on Wednesday, walked into the station. They said, "We liked your work." He said, "Why don't you go again next week?" So next week, Fred and I went and covered my second Redskin game, which is the NFC Championship game, when George Allen got carried off the field. They beat the Dallas Cowboys. So now, as the Redskins prosper, I'm prospering. Because the next week they say, "Okay, how do you guys want to cover the Super Bowl?" And we went out, we flew first class, we went to Los Angeles, stayed a week, and a rental car went everywhere. We did all these reports, and then they played the Miami Dolphins in the Super Bowl, and it was an ugly game, and they lost. And it was history. I saw the Dolphins do something nobody's ever done, finish the season unbeaten. But the Redskins lost. And I remember sitting in the media tent and I was absolutely blank, writer's block. I didn't know what to do. I was so upset the Redskins had lost because when they won, every time they won, I won. It was better for me. And all of a sudden they lost. I'm going, "Oh," and I said, "Damn, I'm never going to feel like this again." I got involved in the team emotionally. And I wrote my pieces, and I got home, and I thought more about it, and I said, that's it. From now on, they got me involved in sports then more and more. I said, I'm not going to get emotionally involved, and I'm not going to make friendships. I'm not going to say my success relies on this team, because it doesn't. This team is on its own. And I think that's the way, eventually, I approached the Redskins job. I know that's the way I did the Bullets. Everybody knew that, you know, I got excited when the Bullets won, but at the same time, I tried to be objective about it. And that carried over to the Redskins. Early in the Redskins thing, I think with Sonny and Sam, somebody referred to we need to do this. And I went, after it was over, I said, hold it. We're not going to use we again. If we use, because we don't need to do anything but sit here and call the game. We don't play football. And that, when you say we, that implies you're a homer and that you're biased. And when you're biased, people don't think you're credible. And when they don't think you're credible, they may not listen to you. And luckily, Sonny and Sam both bought into that and they agreed with me. And it's something we never did. It was an ironclad rule. So there's your long story about that.
Well, that's a great story. I was fortunate to be the statistician with Frank, Sam, and Sonny for 3 years, and I never heard the word we spoken on air, to your point. Now, hey, that first Super Bowl that you worked, that was Super Bowl VII. The great Riggins call was Super Bowl 17 at the Rose Bowl. Now, in between, you got the gig to be the Redskins broadcaster. How did that happen? How did you... Frank, Sam Huff and Sonny Jurgensen come together. And Frank, what was the magic that caused so many people in the D.C. area to turn down the volume on the TV and turn on you guys? What was it?
Well, now boy, that's a big, long question, but here we go. Off the top, I think I was maybe the luckiest broadcaster in D.C. during that time period, or one of them, because things just kept falling into my hands unexpectedly. It was almost like Forrest Gump. I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. They said, you want to do this? And I go, okay. Anyway, that's the way the Bullets was. So the Redskins thing came up. I finished the Bullets. The big boss at Channel 9 talked me into going to Channel 9 to work as a weekend sportscaster. He said it was time to move on. Besides, he wanted me to back up a guy named Glenn Brenner. So I said, okay.
An institution in D.C.
Yeah, holy cow. Was talking about a bad job. And at the Christmas party that year, I went to passed by WMAL's Christmas party. And I just stopped in to say hi to Andy Ockershausen and a couple of people. He was the general manager. And in the course of the conversation, I said to him, you know, anything ever opens up with the Redskins job, I'd love to talk to you about doing it. And he said, fine. Well, he says, if anything ever happens, we'll get together. I'll be darned, 3 months later, the guy who had the job quit. He worked at Channel 7. He quit there and moved to San Francisco. The job was open. So I went in and talked to Andy. I interviewed, and I got the job. And Sam and I did it the first 2 years. And then Andy came up and said, I want to add Sonny Jurgensen to the crew. What do you think? And we said, well, you think there's room for three voices in the booth? And he said, yeah, I think so. And we said, okay, let's try it. And Sonny came in and sat down, and maybe 8 or 9 minutes into the first quarter, we knew it was done. That was it. It worked, because he was an accomplished broadcaster already. He had worked for CBS television doing color commentary on games. Sam, of course, had been doing it forever. And the two of them were the best of friends. They roomed together in training camp under Vince Lombardi. And every home game, Sonny would stop and pick up Sam on the way to the stadium. So they were the best of friends. They were like brothers. So it was perfect for me. So then my job was to sit between two NFL Hall of Famers and talk about a football game. All I had to do was just, you know, keep the wagon moving and make sure it moved in the right direction. It was a piece of cake. And we did things like we were the first ones to acknowledge the existence of television and replays, because, again, it made us more credible, because we could say, well, we don't know if there was a good call or not, but we're looking at the replay and yeah, it was, or no, it wasn't. So that's how it happened. And then the chemistry there was, I think, largely because of Sonny and Sam's friendship And then my earnest need to soak up as much football knowledge as I could from those two. And it was I considered it my master's degree in professional football, and I had two professors who were expert at it.
And you became an expert at it, no doubt about that. Frank, the week before that first Super Bowl victory, the Redskins won the NFC Championship game over Dallas at RFK Stadium, and reports are that place really was rocking.
Wow, I still remember that. That's one of the plays I remember. Dexter Manley knocked the ball up in the air, and Darryl Grant got it and pranced. He pranced into the end zone.
That was amazing.
Yeah. And then the stadium just went crazy because the week before they'd been chanting, "We want Dallas, we want Dallas." And then they got Dallas and they beat Dallas. And the place went bananas. And it's an old stadium, and our broadcast box was suspended from the second deck. We hung there just above the ground floor, and it started shaking. And Sam and I looked at each other, and there was a look of fear on Sam's face because we thought the thing was going to collapse. It was rocking so bad, scared the hell out of us.
I don't blame you.
It was a great time. Great moment.
What about any other moments that stand out, Frank, whether from the other two Super Bowl wins or just another game?
There was a game, Super Bowl in Minneapolis against Buffalo. Mark Rippon was the quarterback. And I had been out there all week for Channel 7 doing live shots. And I met this young kid who was going to the Mayo Clinic who had a form of cancer that was genetic in his brain. And they were treating him, but it didn't look good. His older brother had died of the same cancer. But he came by and he talked about it. And this was right after Glenn Brenner had died. Glenn Brenner was diagnosed, I guess. No, he passed away. That's right. And so it was kind of cathartic to talk to this kid. And I knew how big a Redskin fan he was, so I talked to Sam, and we managed to get him and his dad tickets to the game. After the game was over, I came down to go to the locker room, and I found them in the stands, and I said, "Would you like to go to the locker room?" And his dad said, "Well, he's been given a lot of medication to kill the pain, but I think he can handle it." So I took his hand and took him into the locker room, and he was amazed. His eyes were as wide as crazy. And I walked over to Mark Rippon, who was the MVP of that Super Bowl. I said, "Mark, I want you to meet a friend of mine. He's here going to the Mayo Clinic, and he's a big Redskin fan." And Mark Rippon knelt down and spent 5 minutes with that kid as if there were no one else in the room, gave him his full attention. And I thought, I'll never forget that. It was one of the greatest moments I've ever been involved with. And, of course, the kid... he managed to live until spring training with the Orioles, and then he passed away. So, but that's the kind of memory you get those memories. I don't remember scores, and I don't remember much sometimes about games, but I remember those things. There was the game in San Diego where it looked like, I'm telling you, the play I remember, Denver Broncos scored, took a 7-0 lead, kicked off, and there was a fumble on the kick return, and there was a huge pileup, and two of the Redskins special teamers dove into the bottom of the pile and somehow got the ball back at the 13-yard line. And to this day, I said, if they hadn't wrestled that ball away, the Broncos would have had first and 10 of the Washington 13, and the entire complexion of the game may have changed. But as a result, Doug Williams and the Redskins exploded for like 35 points in the second quarter and cruised to an easy victory. So those, you remember those moments.
I think that's still a Super Bowl record for most points in a quarter.
Yeah. So those are the takeaways from those Super Bowls.
Hey, I know you also, that was a lovely story about the young man in Minnesota. as I said, I was fortunate to sit with you and Sam and Sonny for 3 years, and the difference between the two of them, Sonny, the classic Southern gentleman, laid back, you know, long removed from his playing days. And I know you have a story to tell about him in a minute, but Sam, on the other hand, as you well know, Frank, in many ways still had the shoulder pads on. I mean, he was still ready to go. Right?
Well, you know, and Kelly, I'll tell you, there were times with the two of them that they would get upset. They'd get mad because a team wasn't playing well. An offense wasn't playing well. Sonny got a little surly. And Sam got pissed when the defense didn't play well. And I've seen them get mad when the other team didn't play well. They had this feeling that there was a certain standard that NFL players should perform with. And if they didn't meet that standard, Sonny and Sam didn't like it. And, you know, the degree of their angst would depend on which team it was and how bad it was. But there were times when and then they'd get quiet and I'd go, oh, crap. Come on, guys. And then I'd have to find a way to jack them up to get them going again and start asking them questions so they'd talk. Because we're doing a broadcast here. Just because you're mad,
you still got work to do.
Yeah, we got work to do. But they were classic. I mean, they were fun, and they came from an era when football was fun. You know, you had a full time job in the off season because football was a part time job, and so it was a whole different world.
It really was. I mean, CBS did the documentary, The Violent World of Sam Huff, that was narrated by none other than Walter Cronkite, that really chronicled how incredibly, you know, powerful he was as a defensive player, went on and obviously into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I before you tell the story about Sonny, which is awesome, the one snippet I'll tell about Sam, it was, I don't remember what game it was before, but I kind of knew the answer to the question, and I casually said, Mr. Huff, was there ever a quarterback that you never got a good lick on in all your years playing? I knew the answer. Well, he looks at me with his steely eyes, and he points his finger at me, and he says, let me tell you something. If that effing Fran Tarkenton walked in the room right now, I would blindside that you-know-what and knock him out. I chased him around for 15 years and never caught him.
I've never seen a guy hate one player so much. And he admired Jim Brown. I mean, as much as they collided on the football field, he admired him.
Brown knocked him out twice in the same game.
You know, and everybody underestimated. The other thing was everybody underestimated Sam, or they took him for the country bumpkin, which was a role he liked to play. But, yeah, but you know, he was clever. We were sitting one time in an airport, and a guy walks up with his son, and he said, excuse me, Mr. Jurgensen? He says, yeah. He says, isn't your first name Christian? And Sonny said, yes, it is. And he said, well, I want you to meet my son, Christian. And Sonny goes, oh, great. That's great. And he shakes the kid's hand, and he said, that's a great name. It's nice to meet you. And they walk off. And Sam turns to me, and he says, they always name their kids after the quarterbacks. He said they name their dogs after the linebackers. And the other thing he used to say was, we get into a game, it'd be second and long, and he'd say, look for a screen pass or some kind of delay, draw play, some kind of delay. So I said to him one time, you always say that. Why? He says, I don't know. That's what they always do. And I went, okay. So I saw John Madden. We were in New York for a Giants game, and John Madden's on the sidelines, and we're all BSing. So I go to Madden, I said, hey, and I told recount this to John Madden. I said, why is that? And he said, well, you can't run it on first down because you wouldn't surprise anybody. You can't run it on third down because everybody would say it was a give-up play. The only thing you got left is second down. I said, oh, okay. That's as good an explanation as I'm going to get.
All right, how about the autograph, the Sonny story in the autograph?
We're in Cleveland. We're in Cleveland waiting for an airplane to come home, and we're sitting there, and this woman walks up to Sonny and says, Mr. Jurgensen? He said, yes. She says, would you autograph this program for my husband? And it's obvious when she says that, that she's drunk. And he said, sure, I'll be happy to. And he says, what's your husband's name? And she says, Charlie. And he says, okay. And he she says, hold it. She said, don't put any of that best wishes bullshit on there, okay? And he said, well, what am I supposed to put? F you? And she said, that would be good. And so he says, okay. And he writes, Charlie, F you, Sonny Jurgensen, Hall of Fame, 84. And she said, thanks. And she walks off. And I'm going, holy cow. Now, she's drunk, but I got to figure she stuck it in her purse and she's managed to get it home to her husband. And the husband looks at it and says, well, that's cool. And he'll probably laugh. But was he smart enough to frame it? Was he smart enough to keep it? Because can you name another quarterback who's ever done that? Could you see Joe Montana writing that on an autograph? Or Dan Marino?
It might be the greatest autograph ever.
It could be, yeah. It was just, and Sonny had this magnetic quality about him that people were just drawn to him. I think they identified with him as an everyman, as a guy who was always, something was always going wrong and he found out a way to win. And I think that attracted people. He was one of my favorites.
Frank, I mentioned earlier about you going back to FedEx Field for the retirement of Sonny's number. What was that like for you emotionally? And I know you called one of the team's touchdowns that day, and you put a little Frank twist onto it.
Well, something had gotten messed up, and I hadn't been invited. I still don't know what happened there, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. But the communications people quickly scrambled and said, we got to get you up here. They flew me up. I had a limo waiting at the airport, a big old Chevy SUV, and the funniest guy, the chauffeur, was just outstanding. He drove me to FedEx Field eventually, parked right up on the sidewalk. I got out of the car, and I'm thinking, oh, God, we're going to get arrested. And I walk around the front of the thing, and there's this great big old security guard standing there, and he goes, hey, Frank Herzog, how you doing, man? It's like I'd been gone a week. And he says, where are you going? We told him, and he says, come on. He says, you're going to have to go through the South Portal. So he takes me down there, and we get our tickets and go in, and I go to the concourse level, and I do a pregame interview. And I set the record straight about how they treated me very, very well, first class. And then later they took me up to a suite that was completely on the other side of the field. And then it came time to go down and they wanted me to be there at halftime in the radio booth to watch the ceremonies. And then to talk during the third quarter, maybe to talk a little bit about what I saw. But along the way, I kept running into fans, and they were glad to see me. And they started telling stories and remembering things. They wanted selfies. It was just an outpouring. I was just amazed. It was my first time back in 18 years, and I felt like I'd been gone a month. And the fans were just, the fans that were still there were great. And I got to the booth and I watched the ceremony, and then we started the third quarter, and I had watched the first part of the game. And I said to the chauffeur up there, I said, Dallas isn't ready to play. The punter fumbled the punt on the first play, their first series. And I'm going, they're not ready mentally. And sure enough, they played badly and Washington beat them. So I'm sitting there talking about that in the third quarter and talking with London Fletcher. And during a commercial break, Bram leans over and says, look, if they score a touchdown, I want you to use your signature call. And I said, really? He says, yeah, you got to do it. I'm saying, okay. So I'm thinking, well, what the hell? They're not going to do that. They're not going to score. They're playing the Dallas Cowboys, and they got a rookie quarterback. Well, I'll be darned. The kid runs it in from like 9 yards out. Bram calls the play and gets him into the end zone and turns to me. And I call touchdown Washington Commanders. And it was a fun moment. It was very gratifying. So it turned out to be a really wonderful day and a great experience. And I kind of savored it. It was kind of nice. Brought back a lot of old memories, and it was a good time to go back. And then I came home and my wife brought me back down to earth.
That's been known to happen.
It's her gift.
All right, one final question from me. Do you miss calling the games, Frank?
No. It was fun being in the booth, but it's, you know, at my age, it's not something I would want to. It's too much. Yeah, there's too much to it. It's too complicated. It's too, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to go back to that. And I think the travel and all that stuff and all the BS you have to put up with now, it's just, you know, this isn't the old man talking. This is me. The world has changed. I like it in a lot of ways, but the world has changed dramatically. It's not the world that I worked in when we did those Super Bowls with Sonny and Sam. The broadcast industry is very different. It's not any fun. And
what do you mean by that?
While I understand the change and I understand progress, I think the world is changing and we just have to learn to accept it. It's like the name change of the Washington team. Nobody likes Commanders, but guess what? 20 years from now, but nobody's going to know. It's not going to make any difference. What were they called when they were in Boston? Who remembers?
Not I.
Kelly? Weren't they the Redskins?
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, hey, you walk away and you say, it's like, well, you know, there's gambling now. It's open. It's open gambling. It's advertised gambling.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't mention gambling line when I was doing the football or basketball. Oh, no, you'd get fired. The FCC would be after you. You could not do that. That was a sin. So there's just so much difference. And I saw the other day I read a newspaper article, the New York Times, about the big center for the University of North Carolina basketball team. His gross income this year is going to be about $500,000. His mother's his agent. I remember Kevin Greavy talking about getting a car from Kentucky and $5,000 for him to sign with Kentucky. And one of the other players said, shoot, I didn't get anything. I had a beat up old Ford. So, you know, but I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's different. It's changed. The world has changed. I think it's become more automatic. I think we're seeing gladiators out there now. And I think the National Football League has become a huge corporate entity. And I think it's marching on and it's taking over that whole world. And who knows where it's going to go?
That's a great question.
Hey, before we wrap this up, final question and a quick answer from you, Frank. We mentioned about the photography early on, but you've been involved in major motion pictures. You told me, I think, 13 film credits, including one of the National Treasure movies. I think you had a speaking part in, right?
When I got fired by the Redskins and Channel 9, I said, I made a list of what I wanted to do, things I wanted to do, and one of them was to be a movie extra. So I went to a casting director and found out how to do it, got my picture, my resume. And I think the fact that I had done the Redskins helped a little bit with some of the production assistants, but I wound up in 13 different films. I had two speaking parts. I'm in National Treasure Book of Secrets, where I do Happy Birthday, Mr. President. I feel like Marilyn Monroe. And then and then I had a...
That was shot out at Mount Vernon, wasn't it?
In the cold. And then I did. Played a part of a judge in a movie called Step Up. I still get residuals from them, which I cannot believe.
Are you making more of those residuals than you did from the call from NFL
films? I didn't think about that. Yeah, I am. I mean, the residuals trickle in like $16 or $8. One time I got two checks, one for 2 cents and one for 3 cents. But I've also gotten $50 checks. So, yeah, I'm making more from them than I made from the National Football League.
Should have been a movie star.
That's right. I missed my calling. I should have been in the movies.
Frank Herzog, thanks for being with us. Thanks for the great memories today and for being the voice of champions in a great era in Washington.
Thank you. Enjoyed talking to you guys.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Kelly and Bob back after listening to Frank Herzog. Man, can that guy tell some stories, particularly with the likes of Sam Huff and Sonny Jurgensen around him. It was an incredible run that those guys had calling Redskins games in their golden era, Bob.
And you were very fortunate to be a part of it as a statistician for 3 years. Wow, what a job that was for you, Kel.
Yeah, it was a real dream come true. And they couldn't have been kinder to me and just a lot of fun to be around. And like Frank was saying, very approachable men. I mean, they liked people, and they liked telling stories and being part of the group, if you will, the extended family of a lot of people in the D.C. area. Great to have Frank Herzog. We thank him immensely for joining us. Looking forward to hearing next week from Tony Boselli, the Hall of Fame lineman, played his career with the Jacksonville Jaguars out of USC in his collegiate days. Hope you'll join us then for Musings on Sports. For now, and for Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off, Musings on Sports.